Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, July 13th. I'm Ray Graff. Whether you're flipping a home or finally getting around to that home improvement project of yours, well, it can be a daunting process, you know, but we have a licensed professional engineer and construction specialist here. Darren Tracy is back with us today to answer your questions, large and small, about your next home improvement project. To join today's discussion, 1-800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, your calls and much more coming up on, well, not really that much more. That's about it. Darren Tracy and your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call and talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk house maintenance and home repair and home improvement today with Darren Tracy. He is a licensed professional engineer with extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He's a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. You know, we take a lot of calls about plumbing on this show. He helms the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. So are you planning a home improvement project in the near future, or if you're stuck in the middle of a remodeling project or whatever, maybe you're flipping a house, give us a call, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org, or tweet us at @WAMCVoxPop. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Ray.
Nice to have you here. So when we started just chit-chatting during the news, you had mentioned flipping houses, and that is something I know very little about. It sounds a little bit unsavory to me.
It does. It does. In fact, I made a note about that. I don't like the term flipping houses other than the fact that it seems to catch people's attention. I would more like to call it buy, add value by repairing, and sell.
Yeah.
And it can be short-term or long-term. It can be 6 months, 6 years, 36 years, because most homeowners are eventually going to sell their home.
Right.
Not all, but by far, most will sell their home. So
if you do this sort of thing, then you're looking for one that has a good value to start and presumably doesn't take too much work to add value, because you can really get in over your head.
Well, not necessarily, depending upon the degree of skills that you have and how involved you want to be. I wanted to briefly discuss house flipping in the context of historic preservation. It can be a method of preserving our historic buildings, because often, for instance, in the city of Albany, you can purchase a home that needs some TLC relatively inexpensively and add value to that home. And at the same time, it acts as a historic preservation initiative and helps improve the community. So it's a win-win.
But
can be a win-win.
In a situation like that where you have a historic home, aren't there some constraints upon what you can do? In other words, can you add modern features, or do you have to keep it within sort of the historic framework that you're getting?
Usually on the inside, you can do whatever you want to do on the inside. Depending upon the municipality, sometimes there are guidelines on the exterior.
800-348-2551 is our telephone number. And I saw before the show started the magazine. And so this is a project that you were talking about, I think, 3 or 4 shows ago.
Right. And it was a boardwalk in Round Lake.
Yeah.
Through a wetland. I'll hold it up here so everybody can see
well,
it.
Well, you know, there are people watching at WAMC.org.
Can all of our listeners
well, they
see
can.
It?
They can see
okay.
it, sure, if they go to our website.
All right. Anyways, it was an interesting project, and it just came out in print in the Professional Deck Builder, so I brought it in to show
you. So that's
you.
That's a like pretty pictures. Large project. How long is that boardwalk?
It's about 500-600 feet, and ends with a canoe launch and overlook.
So you put that in parts of that anyway, in spots where the ground not all that firm, right?
Right. It's through a wetland, and we use these helical micropiles to disturb the wetland and as minimally as possible. And it affords a really nice experience walking out through this wetland. It's in the Round Lake or the outlet around Lake, and it's really nice opportunity to experience that wetland.
So what is the shelf life of that particular boardwalk, given the moisture and the dampness around it?
Well, if the ice doesn't take it out, that can last 50 years.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Terrific. Darren Tracy is our guest. The number to call is 800-348-2551. Let's go to Mark in Ballston Spa. Mark.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, Mark.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
So I have a spot outside the back door of my house. It was originally a cement pad attached to my garage that before I moved in, they paved maybe an inch and a half of pavement over the cement. Over time, because of the drainage of water from the front of the house, the pavement got undermined, essentially, with a lot of water was getting under there, and it was falling apart. I've just recently taken off that layer of pavement, and the cement is really degraded underneath. So there's spots where the cement is just flaking off, a quarter inch, and then spots where I've got a three-inch hole, still cement at the bottom. But I'm trying to figure out how to level off that cement, and I've been told that you can't really use regular cement for the whole thing because where it's thin, the product won't work well. And I wondered if you had any suggestions for how to remediate that problem with the cement.
I've got a couple ideas, Mark. Did you initially say that there's blacktop over top of the cement?
Yeah, I took that off, though. So I've exposed just the cement.
Okay. Well, if you've heard me on this show, you've heard me say in the past, you've heard me say that water is the enemy. So you need to take care of the source of the problem, direct the water away from that particular area. And then after you do that, you can fill those voids with concrete mix. It can be bagged concrete mix that you buy at your local hardware store. And that's good for the deeper areas. And then if you have a thinner area on top, the aggregate in the concrete won't allow you to smooth that out, so you'd use a thinner topping product, and it would be a high-strength material you'd be looking for, and generally that's a bit more expensive. A repair mortar would be a technical term to use.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So it's kind of a two-step process?
Yes.
Regular concrete for the thicker parts and then
a repair mortar, right. Polymer-modified repair mortar. That has an additive in the mix that helps bonding.
Okay.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551. And Darren Tracy, our guest today. Bill in the town of Root. Bill, you're on.
Hi. There's a bunch of small houses that have a septic holding tank, and they all seem to leak no matter how new or old they are. For instance, if you pump one out in the fall, it will fill with water before anybody uses it in the spring. And I'm wondering, is there a way to install these properly so they don't leak, or are there alternatives to repair them later? Do you know anything about these septic holding tanks and what can be done to make them work better?
Okay, so you pump these tanks out and they're not used all year round. They're used seasonally?
That's right. These are seasonal cabins, and even if one of the occupants pumps it out in the fall, it'll be filled in the springtime from water leaking in.
Okay. Well, the water's leaking in someplace. It could be a two-piece septic tank, so this would be work, but you could excavate down halfway and seal the joint between the bottom half and the top half. You could also seal the inlet.
Oh, with the a schmear coating kind of?
You could maybe a caulk and then a waterproofing membrane that you might use on a foundation.
Some of these are even plastic mesh tanks, and they're leaking.
Yeah. They could be leaking around the inlet pipe and the outlet pipe, but let me state that it may not be the best idea to have these tanks empty, because if they are empty and you have a high water table, such as in the spring, they will tend to pop up They can pop up like a boat. And we actually had that occasion happen at a state park, Grafton Lakes State Park. They have a huge waste treatment tank, steel, maybe 40 feet long, 10 feet wide by 15 feet deep. I'll make this quick. But anyways, that was pumped down.
Yeah.
And the water table came up, and it lifted this tank that was something like in the magnitude of 75 tons.
Wow.
Popped it right out of the ground. So our construction company was hired to solve that problem. So be careful about keeping the tank empty in a high water table.
Hey, well, thank you for the call, Bill. We appreciate it very much. This one came in via email. Before we take our break, I'll read you this one. This is from Ted in Easton. We have a small ranch-style house and would like more space. Its roof was built using trusses. What is the most cost-effective way to expand, remove the roof and add a story, or build one or two additions, keeping the house at one story?
I'm not sure. If you're starting from scratch, it's more cost-effective to get the square footage by going up versus out.
Is it?
It is, yeah, sure. You don't have to have the extra foundation. You've got heating the structure. You've got one floor over another floor. So I don't really know. Depends on your site. Could be close to a 50-50.
Okay, very good. Our guest today is Darren Tracy. The number to call is 800-348-2551. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Harold's Ice Cream, Thorne's Marketplace, downtown Northampton, Massachusetts. Over 300 flavors of handcrafted dairy and dairy-free ice creams, cakes, hot fudge, and more. Harolds.com. The Lake George Land Conservancy, Bolton Landing, New York. Maintaining 32 miles of trails throughout the Lake George region for hiking, birding, and outdoor exploration. HikeLakeGeorge.com. The Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York. Sales and service of Audi, BMW, Mercedes, Volvo, Saab, Volkswagen, and Porsche. QFCC.com. And the Ashokan Center, presenting a Catskill Mountain Square and Contra Dance with the Great Bear Trio, Jay and Molly, Caller Will Mentor, Saturday, July 16th, 8 p.m., outdoor barbecue at 6. AshokanCenter.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined today by Darren Tracy. We talk about your home improvement and house maintenance projects. And Darren, your son, he must have a lot of energy, that kid.
I'd like to mention that our son Shane is on a bicycle trip cross country.
Wow.
On a mission to raise money for affordable housing with an organization called Bike and Build.
Wow.
There are a group of them. There are 30 in this year's group, and they have raised money, which they're going to donate to a nonprofit of their choice, such as Habitat for Humanity or other similar organization. So they're riding from New Hampshire to Seattle, couple months, maybe a little bit more, and they're building homes, helping rehab homes along the way. They may ride 2 or 3, 4 days in a row, and then they'll stop and help build.
Why don't they stop at my house?
Well,
you know, so they started in New Hampshire. Where are they now?
Just outside of Michigan. They might be in Wisconsin.
Wow. And
a blog every day from him. He started out blogging every day.
And now he's exhausted.
They're riding 70, 80, 110 miles a day.
And then building a house the next day or working on a house.
Usually they'll have a long ride, then they'll take the next day off and build a home.
Wow.
Help build a home
and
repair a home.
When did they start?
He started about 3 weeks ago.
Wow.
Yeah.
Of course, you know, a tough part of the journey ahead. Getting over the hills,
right?
You know, when you get to that West Coast, there's that upward climb.
Well, pretty cool concept, though.
Pretty cool. I hope they're going to be in good shape when they're done, that's for sure. So that's great. Our guest today is Darren Tracy. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Nancy in Amsterdam. Nancy, you're on.
Hi. I have a question. I have a wall. I want to take down the wall and make it a bigger room, but I'm pretty sure it's a bearing wall, and I'm not sure how to calculate how big a beam I need to span the opening. Do I count how many studs I took out, or how do I figure that out?
You should hire somebody like me, a licensed professional engineer, to look at that. And maybe it's not a load-bearing wall. Often I've run into situations where homeowners thought a particular wall was load-bearing and it wasn't. So you could have a contractor look at that for free.
Interesting.
And it's really not that difficult to size it up. There are some load charts. You could even go to your lumber yard and utilize some of those load charts. But you could get in trouble, too. So you should consult somebody that knows what they're doing. And I'll mention my email. I'll take any simple questions that anybody wanted to email.
Nice.
It won't cost anything as long as it's not an elaborate question.
What is that email?
My email is Darren@westbranchinc.com. I'll spell that Darren@west, the direction west, W-E-S-T, branch of a river, B-R-A-N-C-H. INC.com. Send me a picture, and I can give you some guidance on that.
Well, that's very nice. Nancy, thank you for the call. And over to Maggie in Albany. Maggie, you're on.
Hello, thank you. I'm calling. We have a 1920 house that we want to put some attic insulation in, but we also want to make that a room up there. So we've been arguing about what kind of insulation and whether spray foam directly on the interior of the attic, or if you need to leave a little gap for air flowing from the soffits up to the ridge vent, is required.
Okay, that's a good question, Maggie. If you use spray foam, you do not want any gaps, because a gap would provide an area for moisture to condense due to cooling temperatures. So spray foam, no gaps. Spray foam is a good form of insulation. There are two types of spray foam, closed cell and open cell. For an attic application, you would want a closed cell.
Right.
And make sure you use a reputable contractor, and you don't want any gaps. You want them to fill all the voids. Now, another option would be blown insulation, blown cellulose, or blown fiberglass. And if you used that type of insulation, you would need to leave an air gap between the bottom of your roof sheathing and the insulation below that, and you would have a soffit vent and a ridge vent or a gable vent.
We have that as well.
Right. So there are two different methods, two different approaches.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks,
you
bet, Maggie. So tell me the difference between the closed cell and the open cell.
Closed cell is less permeable than an open cell.
When would one be appropriate as opposed to the other?
An open cell could be used on a wall for wall insulation. It's less expensive.
Mm-hmm.
An open cell you wouldn't want to use in an attic, because it's not as moisture resistant and not as moisture impermeable. So you'd have to go with a more expensive closed cell. You don't want that moisture going through the insulation and condensing on your wood decking.
Our guest today is Darren Tracy. The number to call is 800-348-2551 on this Vox Pop program. And let's go to Joe in lovely Bedford Hills in northern Westchester. Joe, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Good. Welcome to the show.
I have a question. I have a garage on top of which a studio has been built. And if we're looking at the garage, it's a double-wide door, and to the right side of that, it's sort of a concrete bunker, a poured concrete bunker that serves as a machine room. The boiler and so on is in there. Now, this particular bunker juts out above the beyond the roof line about 6 or 8 feet. Now, just down the roof line, which is on the outside of the, which sits on the outside of the garage wall, obviously. I get some water seepage. Now, I didn't mention that the bunker is covered by about 2 or 3 feet of soil and grass, because it sits outside the garage proper, per se. So I'm getting some seepage there, and I want to remove the soil and remediate the water coming in. What's the best way to do that?
I'm not really getting the picture on that, Joe. You're talking about the roof line and then the soils.
The garage, let's say, is 20 by 21. On the right left side of the garage is a bunker that sits outside the roof line, outside the wall of the garage, and three parts of it are on the ground. The wall of the garage is open toward this bunker, but the bunker juts out underground about 6 or 8 feet.
Okay.
And on top of it is about 2 feet of soil. So this is a concrete bunker, but I'm getting some seepage between the outside wall of the studio above, which is the outside wall of the garage, and the bunker per se.
Okay.
Somewhere
right.
there.
So the grade is
some leaks going in.
The grade is higher on one side of the garage than the other.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, water is the enemy.
I know.
A direct water away from the structure. That's the one.
I'm
going to
take the soil out.
Okay.
I'm going to take the soil out. I just want to know what is it like? Roof flashing? Maybe I can put.
No.
There and.
No, if you want to keep it, ensure that it's dry. You would use a waterproof membrane. There's a foundation coating out there. It's an asphalt-based coating, but that's more of a damp proofing product. Mm. It's not as good as a waterproof coating. And you can go at contractor supply stores. I won't mention any names, but the more serious contractor supply stores have this product. Sometimes you can apply it in a sheet good material, but I've found more success with in the liquid form. You mop it on.
Hey, Joe, I got a question for you.
Yeah.
So what is it, a bomb shelter? What is the thing?
I don't know, man. Somebody just added on. I don't know why they put that thing there, but I didn't build it.
I bet there's a story there.
1908.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, cool. Maybe. I went to the town. There's no records on this home at all.
Very interesting.
No prints, nothing.
Well,
this doesn't even seem to exist, except I live there.
Yeah,
so
luck.
I know it's there.
Well, thanks for that call. Love hearing from Bedford Hills. All my best.
Yeah, I know. I talked to you the other day about my dog, and you said that you worked down there for a while.
Yeah.
So I'm,
like
a return caller.
Like 25 years ago or so. Hey, Joe, thanks for the call.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, man.
Have a good one. Yeah, let's go over to Michelle. The number to call here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. 800-348-2551. Now we go up a ways, and Michelle in Champlain, New York. Michelle.
Hi.
Hi.
Glad to hear you guys on the radio. It's great.
Thanks.
I have an old house, 1889, and I have redone 99% of it. And I'm looking to resell it, but the realtor says the best thing to do for resale value is to add a third bedroom.
Hmm.
And I'm wondering, with all the money that I've already put into it, I've done roof, done electrical, I've done plumbing, doors, windows, in addition, be worth it?
Well, that's a function of the layout of your home. If you could chop up one of the rooms and small home.
Yeah, I thought about that.
Small home, yeah.
Yeah, well, it's from the 1800s, and it has one addition to it.
Yeah, well.
So,
because it's old doesn't necessarily mean that it's small.
Yeah, it's small. Best thing I could think of was a basement, but like you said, water is the enemy. So I really, it has a sump pump there.
Yeah. I know that three bedrooms are much more popular than two bedrooms. My wife happens to be a real estate broker, so I hear that quite a bit. Three bedrooms are very popular.
Right.
If you did the mathematics on that, Michelle, I think your realtor would be wrong. You'd probably money ahead to sell the house for less money versus putting more money into it, creating a third bedroom,
right,
and then selling.
Because I've done the heating system, plumbing system, electrical. I even put a generator on it. So I'm thinking if I sell this within 5 to 6 years, that stuff will still be in excellent shape and will get top dollar.
Yep. Sounds As like I said, I think if you do the math, if you don't have the right layout for it, the house, the rooms aren't large enough to carve out another bedroom, then you probably money ahead just to bite the bullet and sell the home for a smaller dollar value than the added expense of an addition. And I don't think you'll get your money back.
That's not a certainty.
You can look at your real estate market, but generally, that's my gut.
Well, Michelle, how's the weather up there today?
It's beautiful. It's 92.
Yikes.
It's going to be almost 100 tomorrow.
Oh, good
times. We are right on the Canadian border. I can walk outside my house and cross over to Canada, 45 from Montreal.
Well, why don't you go get some Cuban cigars? Perfect.
Well, thanks. It's hard getting them back across the border.
Yeah, you make a point. Hey, Michelle, thanks for the call.
Thanks, Michelle.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. Over to John in Niskayuna. John, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've got a house in Niskayuna. It's a one-level ranch built in 1945. I bought the house thinking I could, you know, add on to it with time as my family grows. And sort of boiled it down, what I want is I want to push out sort of where the bathroom is just enough to change where the angle where the bathtub is and make a little more room. How do you tell, like, is that something I could just do with sonotubes and support that from outside, or would I have to do a whole foundation underneath and then bring that up to the sill of the house? The same thing in the front. I'd like to get a mud room and a porch, but I'm wondering, as I put together the plans in my mind, if I need sonotubes, if I can do a full foundation, and then, of course, the question is, how do I tie that in with the roof
there? Okay, John, I would advise against the sonotubes. Technically, that could be done if you install them down below the frost line.
What's a sonotube?
Sonotube is a round form, cardboard form, various diameters. You dig a hole, throw the sonotube in, fill it with concrete, and it acts as a foundation.
Yeah.
Okay. They work good for decks. I don't like them for additions because you have the problem of insulating the underside of your structure. And rodents seem to always get in there. It's a great place for them to protect themselves during the winter. So I don't like that. So I would advise a conventional foundation, or you could use what I call an Alaskan slab, which is a thickened concrete slab. Don't go down 4 feet. Just pour a slab. Then around the perimeter, you increase the depth of the concrete. And according to the building code of New York State, you also have to add some insulation around the perimeter, both vertically and horizontally, so the frost doesn't penetrate below that slab and heave it. But that's a cost-effective method of creating additional footprint of which to build upon.
Hello? Gotcha.
All right.
Gotcha. So then this all, you know, I'm certainly going to contract with someone that can draw up plans and make sure that I get the most sound idea. But then just, am I saving money tax-wise, do you know, like just by pumping out a little bit here or there? Or are they going to, is that even just these little 5 foot here, 10 foot there, is that still going to kill me on the overall tax bill for the
square footage? Well, you wouldn't be saving any money, I can tell you that.
Huh.
You know, your taxes in part are based upon the square footage of the home, and you would be getting a building permit, or you should. I would advise getting a building permit, and that usually triggers an assessment increase. So, pay the tax man.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so even if it's just like, you know, 100 square feet, it still might make a big deal down the road.
Well, I'm not. You know, that's relative. I mean, it's generally it would be based upon the square footage, the size. I mean, the smaller the size,
totally
the less tax increase.
Totally different question. If I'm adding on like a screened porch, is that count in the square footage? Like I have trouble figuring out what counts as square footage, what doesn't count as square footage.
Yeah, they may be taken into consideration as an accessory, but they are not counted on the same square footage as the livable space in a home.
All right.
Porches and decks.
All right. Thank you.
Gotcha. Well,
usually
you
they don't
much.
Ding you too bad for that.
All right.
All right. Good things to keep in mind.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks, John. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551. But what if you had a patio or a deck or an overhang and you said, well, I'm going to make this into a three-season room? Then what does the tax man say?
Depends on if you tell them or not.
Oh, I see where you're going with that. All right, let's go over to Stephen in Cheshire, Mass. Stephen, you're on.
Yes, sir. Yes, Stephen. I have a new house that I had put in, 3 years ago. And I got back from my last deployment, and I had the house built. And it's a modular. It came in two pieces, and the roof folded out. You understand?
I do understand.
And I want to insulate the upstairs up in the attic more. It was just that rolled fiberglass insulation. Now I had a company come up and spray the foam insulation around the top of the foundation underneath the house. All the sills in my garage goes underneath my house, and that's all foamed in.
That's a good idea.
And so, it's perfect. But, I heard you were saying you got to have a 100% closure with the foam insulation. How in the hell do I do that in my attic?
Okay, well, those are two different applications. Around your sill plate, your spray foam, you don't need 100% enclosure. It's really a good idea to spray foam around your sill plate of your foundation. It seals up air leaks, and your house operates as a chimney, basically. The cold air comes in down low, and it exits up high. It's called a stack effect. So part of the solution preventing that problem is to seal down below. Now, for the attic and your insulation in your attic, if you have rolled out bats of fiberglass insulation, there are gaps in between those rolls, and you lose some energy through those gaps. It's really hard to install that insulation as they would in a laboratory, and also you get mice, other rodents up in there stirring it up, or maybe an electrician or whatever. A good way to add additional insulation is to blown cellulose or blown fiberglass right on top of that. And there are companies that do that, and it's relatively inexpensive and relatively easy to do, and the payback is relatively short term, a couple of years, 2, 3, 4 years. So that's what I would advise. And that blanket of blown insulation, Stephen, seals that up nicely.
Stephen, thank you for the call. We'll take a break here. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest. We'll be back, and the home stretch is on the way.
Support for WAMC comes from the Wild Center, featuring the Wild Walk with treetop views from 1,000 feet of bridges in the forest. Wildcenter.org for details. Kingsway Community, Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including assisted living and more, caring in the family tradition, 518-393-8800. Waterwheel Village, Galway, New York, a country store since 1923, offering aged cheddar cheeses, nostalgic candies, New York products and gifts, waterwheelvillage.com. Old Castle Theater, downtown Bennington, Vermont, presenting the family musical Big River, The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, with music and lyrics by Roger Miller, through July 24th, oldcastletheater.org for tickets. And Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, offering lawn and garden equipment, parts and service to customers throughout Western Massachusetts, a family-owned business for over 50 years, boydenandperrin.com.
Hello again, it's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, an interesting program with our buddy Darren Tracy, and the phone lines, boy, they stay loaded here. So let's get right back and try to service our clientele. Let's go to Albany and Dave, you're on.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Darren, I have a 1973 log cabin, great foundation, no water, two full baths, three bedroom. I want to tear it down and build a new house on that foundation. Is that possible?
Sure. I mean, you're describing the log cabin as such a great place. I was surprised to hear that you want to tear it down. But yeah, no problem.
I want a new house. So I have a great foundation, a great view. So
not a problem.
I have a contractor. Would I contact you? I'm a big fan of Mike Holmes on TV with the Home Network.
Okay.
So I want to make sure I do everything right, rebuilding this house, and there's no. So do I contact a guy like you to come in and lay this out, or just trust my contractor?
Well, you'll need a set of plans for your new home. Do you have a set of plans, Dave?
No, I have it. Yeah, I kind of have it written on a napkin, and my contractor said he would take it from there.
I would strongly advise hiring an architect or.
Yeah. Okay.
Somebody that has a really good feel for space and planning.
Right.
You'll save so much money. I mean, I've built things in the past from scratch and on a napkin. And I'm fairly well skilled in construction. Really pays to have an architect take a look at something
right.
like that.
Okay.
More so than an engineer. A guy like me is good for structures and repairing things, but for the flow in a building, use of space and aesthetics, get a hold of an architect. You can also get some plans online, review online. Now, if you found something online that you really liked, you could come to an engineer and have them take a look at that. In any event, you're going to have that reviewed by a design professional, either a licensed professional engineer or a licensed architect.
Hey, Dave, good luck. That sounds like a fun project.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, we appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Al in Kingston. Al, you're on with Darren Tracy.
Hello there. Good afternoon. My question is, I had a 1960s raised ranch, and some time ago, I came into a problem with mold and ventilation, so I took off the whole roof. I washed everything with chlorine and water, and I put in side ridge. I put in a center ridge vent and side vents on the side. I even put a fan up in there, and I'm finding that I'm getting mold back again. I put new insulation in. I put a wooden floor down over that. I'm just wondering what more I could do.
Okay, you can make sure that you have a clear path between your soffit vent and the insulation that you have and that floor you installed. You do have soffit vent around the soffits, correct, Al?
Yes, I have soffit vents I put in. Problem is I have too much stuff in the attic, and that's why, originally it was a problem. But I thought putting all the ridge vents, the soffit vents, and taking some stuff out of the attic, that it would cure the problem. But apparently I found some leakage on the attic door, and very close to it was the bathroom. So I think I had problems there coming with some hot air coming up into the cold attic.
Well, that's a problem. Check to make sure your bath exhaust fans or kitchen exhaust fans are not venting into your attic space, because you would just be dumping all that humidity that you're exiting from the bathroom.
I checked that all out. You're absolutely right. They did have vented into the attic.
Oh, okay. That's a problem.
But I got the beginning of black mold coming back again. It really upsets me. I don't know what to do. Is there a product I could use for that black mold? What do you recommend for that?
I don't have a product that I know of. There are products out there, but that's not my specialty. But I want to say that you should double check to make sure that you have enough ventilation. Typically, you need 1 square foot of ventilation for every 300 square feet of attic area you have. So calculate up your attic area and make sure you have that proper amount of ventilation, open space. And if you're having problems because you've got boxes and storage up there, you can always increase that. And you could split that up 50-50 between your ridge and your soffit vents. Make sure your ridge vents, the plywood is cut open far enough. Sometimes I've seen where the contractor will install a ridge vent and then you have a very small gap cut in the plywood at the peak to allow the air to ventilate out through the ridge.
I hired a professional to do that. I'm assuming
had that right, but we never came to see it. Okay.
Nope.
Yeah. I would check that out.
Okay, Al, thanks a lot for the call. This one came in via email. Darren, this is from Steven in Middletown. Modular homes have become very popular over the years. What are their advantages? What should we look for in a reputable modular home manufacturer?
I like modular homes. They're built to building code in New York State. And the advantages are that they are constructed in a controlled environment. And I'm really surprised that they haven't caught on more in this country.
So how do you vet those manufacturers?
I think most of them are good. Are okay. If they're in business and they have to build their structures according to building code in New York State, I think most all of them are pretty good.
All right, let's go to Barbara in Ballston Lake. Barbara, you're on with Darren Tracy.
Hi. I have a patio blocks that probably go from underneath an overhang where they're perfectly fine, different colors. They're like a half inch. And then it extends on a walkway under a deck. And under the deck, the middle section where you would walk is crumbling. But the rest, like tied into the house and on the other side, is okay. Is it possible, I think it's moisture and stuff, is it possible to take out those middle sections and leave the rest?
If they're patio blocks, they're segmented pieces, yes, it's possible. And
I'm losing you.
Okay. He says it is possible if they're segmented blocks.
Uh-huh.
And the degradation, is it in the area where you walk?
Yes.
That's interesting. Probably attribute that to some of the salt that being tracked in from winter. And the salt has an adverse effect on concrete.
Because it goes right out towards the driveway.
Yeah. So that's probably the problem. But, you should be able to find some units of similar size and thickness and replace them.
Okay.
Could you, that's encouraging because I was told I couldn't. Could you tell me what your website is again?
It's West Branch Engineering.
Or email I meant.
Oh, email.
Okay. Well, the website is westbranchengineering.com, and there's some interesting information on that site. And my email is darren@westbranchinc.com, D-A-R-R-E-N at westbranchinc.com.
And Barbara, the link is on our website at wamc.org, and we appreciate the call. Over to Chris in, was Chris gone? In Fulton? Let's see. Something strange happened here. Chris, are you there?
Yes, sir.
You're on.
Okay. My question is not really a question, but more of a comment. My experience with cellulose insulation is not good. I really don't like using it, don't like seeing it. It seems to be heavy and gets heavier with time. And the R value isn't really very good. I can't imagine why anyone would want to use that material.
There are people that would differ with you on that. And there are different types of cellulose. There's dense pack cellulose, which is blown into a wall and densely packed. It does settle some over time. I appreciate your opinion on that, Chris.
Yeah, well, thank you, sir. We appreciate the call. Let's go on over to line 5, and it's Lisa in Del Mar. Lisa, you're on.
Okay, thanks for taking this call. We have a cabin that I think was built in the 60s. It was rehabbed maybe 15 years ago, and it's built on a concrete slab. And as far as we can tell, the flooring is linoleum tiles on top of plywood, and they aren't glued down at all. You can lift them right up and see the plywood underneath. And we wondered, would another floor be appropriate? Could we replace that? And if so, what kind of flooring can go on top of plywood that's on top of what we think is we know it's a concrete slab. I don't know what is underneath that plywood, but that seems to be the floor situation.
Yeah, there are alternatives, floating floors that you can install. If it was built in the 60s, probably it did not have a moisture vapor barrier underneath the slab.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah,
it's,
that's
it's
a problem.
Damp cabin. When we got it, we cut, I don't know, like 5 feet of brush and trees from around the cabin to increase the airflow.
Yeah.
And that's helped with sort of the musty smell.
Yeah, you're always going to have that problem. I would suggest running a dehumidifier. Keep a humidistat.
Yeah, we do.
And you do, okay. And if it gets up over 50 or 60%, so make sure your dehumidifier is running. But there are floating floor materials. We recently used a product we had not used in the past, and basically it has sticky edges around the perimeter in one tile. It's probably a vinyl type product. Adheres to the adjacent surface of the next tile, and it all floats. And it's a pretty cool product. And if you know, I don't want to mention the manufacturer's name, but if you want to send me an email, I'll give that to you.
All right.
Yeah.
A floating floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Lisa.
All right. Well, thank you very much. We'll look into it.
I appreciate the call. Over to Megan in Western Mass. Megan, you're on.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call. I had a decking question for you. My house was built in 1986. And it had a white cedar deck, and some of the boards are rotting. And I know they have to be replaced, but my boyfriend and his father think I should just have them rebuild the deck with compressed wood. So I was just wondering what your opinion was.
Okay. Compressed wood, I'd say a product like Trex. Is that what you're talking about? Not necessarily that manufacturer, but that type of a product?
You would know better than I would.
Those are nice, and they tend to be maintenance-free. They have had some product problems with them over time, but some of those problems have been worked out. They are more expensive than, say, pressure-treated lumber. They may not be that much more expensive than cedar, because cedar is more expensive than typical standard pressure-treated lumber that you would buy at your lumber yard.
Okay, so am I better off just having them replace a couple of the planks?
I would try that.
With the white cedar?
I would try that. That would be my approach.
Because that seems what makes sense to me, but I have no carpentry experience, right.
And I like wood. I'm a graduate of the forestry school in Syracuse. I'm a big wood guy, and why not use wood when you can? Mother Nature has these natural preservatives that they built in certain types of wood, like cedar. So I'm just my personal preference. But.
Well, Megan, thank you so much. Over to, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Let's go to Chris. Chris, where are you calling from?
Altona, New York, sir.
You are on, sir. Go ahead. A couple of minutes here left.
Thanks for taking this call. I have a simple question. I have an old house we've added on, but the southern exposure, it was built in 1860. It has a rotten soffit under the south where our kitchen is, and it's a poured rock foundation. I want to replace the foundation. So I was wondering, is there a rule of thumb thickness of the foundation walls get wider with more stories? We'll have 2 stories above it and an 8 and 12 pitched roof above that. What's a good width for a foundation?
Generally for a 2-story home, 16 inches wide, probably enough. You have more of a load in the middle, actually. Because you're supporting both halves of the roof with a gable roof, so you're down the middle. Your isolated piers down the middle need to be big
enough.
Well,
the direction of the peak of the roof faces towards the south, and that's where the kitchen is. So I don't think it's a lower bearing wall per se, but it does have a floor, and it has some load.
Okay. I think we need to talk about this a little bit more. If you want to send me an email after, Okay. You know, sometime after I get off the air, I'd be glad to talk to you more.
All right. Actually, we're just about at the point where we are after. So why don't you give us that email address one more time?
Okay. It's Darren@westbranchinc.com. That's spelled D-A-R-R-E-N at West, W-E-S-T, Branch, B-R-A-N-C-H-I-N-C.com.
All right, Chris, thanks a lot for the call. And that email address and website link is on our website, WAMC.org. All right, Darren, Tracy, nice job today.
Thank you.
Very good, and good luck with your son's travels. I hope we find some updates. Will you have some updates on your side?
Well, he has a blog.
Okay.
I mean, I don't know if anybody's interested, but if they want to email me, I can.
What's the smart money say? Does he make it across the whole country?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
30 started and none have dropped out so far.
All right, man. Well, good luck to him and thanks for being here. Support comes from Pelham Auto Service at the Amherst Belchertown line, located by the sign of the Flying Pig, a worker-owned and operated service repairing foreign cars since 1972. PelhamAuto.com. The Whistling Kettle, helping to promote tea culture in the capital region with over 150 teas and menu of sweet and savory selections. TheWhistlingKettle.com for live chat. And Pave Tile, Wood, and Stone, using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone. Showroom by appointment and online, PAVETile.com. Thanks again to Darren Tracy for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, the architect of all of our signals here today. Bruce Herbach answered your calls. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein Marshall. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the one and only Bob Berman will be with us. Stand by for news.